that have been tried in different Latin American countries in the past. And we basically want to send a message and say we're not in agreement with that. We don't want the U.S. to interfere in the affairs of a sovereign nation such as Venezuela is.
And what's your sense of why so many people will be gathering on that day and why so many people here in the States support what Chavez did in his lifetime and are concerned about how things go forward in Venezuela? What's your sense of why people feel so strongly about this?
Well, I think there's a number of reasons. First of all, when we look at the actual facts as to what the Chavez government and the Bolivarian process have done in Venezuela and Latin America, it's just undeniable that something has begun in Latin America that is unstoppable and that it's an example both to other countries in Latin America, the U.S. and the world, that a different system is possible other than the system that we are suffering right now of exploitation of human beings, and that it's possible to live in life in terms of cooperation and solidarity between human beings. So I think a lot of people here understand that, and they want to make sure that it's understood that what some elements of the U.S. government are doing, it's not the same as what people who live here identify with.
Can you give us an idea of some of the things that many people here feel have been accomplishments of the Hugo Chavez era in Venezuela and some of the things that happened that has led people to be very concerned about the future in Venezuela?
We could look at things like economics and, but specifically in relation to the poor there. One of the myths that are generated by many members of the media here is that, you know, Venezuela's economy is in shambles, it's a mess, etc. But when you look at issues such as extreme poverty that were drastically reduced in Venezuela within the 14 years of Chavez's government, both extreme poverty and general poverty were drastically reduced. Housing, people were able to receive, go basically from living nowhere to having a house to live in. Employment increased during the 10 years plus of the Chavez administration. And then there's a number of things that we can go into specific details, but the data is undeniable.
And in terms of other countries in the area being influenced by Chavez and how things have progressed there, what has happened in response to Hugo Chavez's leadership and his time in Venezuela? What has happened in other countries nearby?
From the beginning, obviously, there's been a lot of sympathy with Cuba, which also has supported Venezuela from the start. But obviously, countries such as Ecuador with Rafael Correa, countries such as Bolivia with Evo Morales, have been very close to the Bolivarian process. And beyond that, there is a number of groups that have been created and promoted primarily by Venezuela and Chavez, such as ALBA, and there's an institution called CELAC. There's a lot of unity that is arising now in Latin America, and this covers both the ideological and the non-ideological. Some of these groups are working on various specific ideological points, but some of them are just working on important issues of commerce and trade. So a lot of people have seen that these processes, they were not visible 15 years ago. They were not something that was expected 15 years ago, and the Bolivarian process has had an essential role in creating this unity.
And what do you want to see in terms of a response from the Obama administration, this country, in regard to these elections that are coming up in Venezuela and the future of Venezuela?
President Maduro, during the funeral of Hugo Chavez, made a point that is perfectly applicable to this question, which is that Venezuela simply wants relations of respect among countries and respect of each other's sovereignty. So we're not asking for much. We're simply asking that the U.S. government respect the democratic process that is taking place in Venezuela, and that, you know, if they like it or they don't like it, that's their right, but to not interfere in any way, just simply let the process continue and let the Venezuelan people decide where they want their country to go. And right now, that seems pretty much to be heading in the direction of continuing the Bolivarian process, as Nicolás Maduro seems to have a great lead over Capriles, the candidate of the opposition.
And I know you gave it before, but could you tell us again the time and location and the date of next week's support action?
Yes, we will be meeting on April 11th at 4 p.m. at Times Square, and we're going to be marching to the United States Permanent Mission to the U.N. We just hope people will come out and support and understand that this, the process in Venezuela has ramifications for the rest of Latin America and for us here in the U.S.
Sergio Gomez Ureña is with the Alberto Lovera Bolivarian Circle. He spoke with WBAI's Jose Santiago. And that's some of the news for Wednesday, April 3rd, 2013. The news was produced in New York with Jose Santiago, Rebecca Miles, and Linda Perry. I'm Andrea Sears in New York for the WBAI, listener-supported news.
Gracias a la vida que me ha dado tanto, me dio dos luceros que cuando los abro perfecto distingo lo negro del blanco y en el alto cielo su fondo estrellado y en las multitudes el hombre que yo amo. Gracias a la vida que me ha dado
tanto. Time that we pass it, each one that we pass it to goes, This is WBAI in New York. My name is Robert Knight, and you're tuned to WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM, or perhaps streaming at WBAI.org on the web. And what a fine moment this is. We're broadcasting live, and it's time for Earthwatch, right here, right now, on WBAI.
The bell for freedom still rings. The bell for freedom still rings. Sorrow to me, but does it ring to know the bell of freedom still rings? The hammer for justice still pounds. The hammer for justice still pounds. Beating sound of the hammer for justice that comes. When the world stop and listen, when will we all stop and see? He looks upon us with a frown to know that millions of babies still starve. Millions of babies still starve. We can't have the biggest heart if millions of babies still starve. And the innocent ones still die. Still die. We can't value life too high if the innocent ones still die. When will the world stop and listen? When will we all stop and see? cause he looks upon us with a frown. Light of truth we won't let shine, light of truth we won't let shine. Tell me, has the world gone blind? The light of truth we won't let shine. As long as there's life, there's still a day. As long as there's life, there's still a day. And I know that we can find our way. For as long as there's life, there's still a day.
Oh, wow, and here we are in the heart of Harlem. This is Earthwatch on WBAI in New York. My name is Robert Knight, and here we are live. You know, we're past the March Madness. And your excellent response in saving your radio station, and for your generosity for the work of all of my wonderful colleagues, and once in a while, myself. But really, it's about what you did, not what we represented. Although we do stand behind the mission of Pacifica, which is to understand the differences among cultures and seek the roads to peace, which brings us many times from both establishmentarian and failed ancestors, the criticism that, well, it's not like I remember it, but you have a vision for our future, which included deity, if any, bless you. Your tremendous response to the WBAI buddy system and even more, the Emergency Transmitter Fund. You know, there was a day when BAI didn't have to pay any rent, and people were able to do things contrary to the mission that resulted in, you know, diminishment. But I am so happy to be alive in this century, when even more than ever before, the continuity of your commitment to this Pacifica non-commercial radio station dedicated to the counter-corporate misrepresentations of truth has come through so fulfillingly. And this is just fulfillingness's first finale. And I just feel that we're in the center of a focus of necessity. And for all of the commercial interests and disgruntled exes. And the soft suppression of the good cop, bad cop, demublican drama that unfolds before us, that you had the wit and the strength and the truth to keep this last emblem independent and truthful journalism alive, called WBAI. And I speak not merely or only for myself, but for everyone who at one time or another has spent time and expended ethical sweat on behalf of an institution after which there will be no other. And thank you for keeping us alive. My name is Robert Knight. This is Earthwatch. And because of the adaptation to our new quarters here at WHCR, within the North Academic Center of the City College of New York, which, in a way that's somehow similar to the non-commercial, listener-supported concept of Pacifica, CCNY was a non-tuitional entry of access for a bright and beautiful time for people not privileged with wealth. but generously blessed with wit. And that's kind of how I feel about BAI. And pardon me if I'm waxing sentimentally, because I really appreciate all the times, whether through The Shadow or Earthwatch or any of the other great shows on this station, that you stood up and came to the call and did the duty of the beauty of being able to listen to such an institution. And we ain't going to go out like that. And you made it so. Thank you very much. Yes, our technicals have been a matter of evolution and miracles. And each day I see our operations staff working on wiring and this and that and the other thing to bring us to the complexity that sounds simple on the air. It takes a lot of work to sound simple on the air. It's not just a matter of brain dysfunction. It takes a lot of technology to faithfully convey a voice, a spirit, a meaning, a community. And I'm just so glad to be with you tonight, okay? Honey, baby, I miss y'all. And we had to do, like, a lot of work, you know, during March. But March Madness is over. And this is Earthwatch on this third day of April. Or actually now fourth. Fourth day of April in the year 2013 of the so-called Christian era. About which more later in the program. And so this is my first time operating this board, although I know a thing or two about radio and television. And in regard to television, let me just say this. Après Magritte. Ceci radio n'est pas une télévision. Okay. So this is our, I'd call this broadcast of Earthwatch a shakedown cruise, more than I would a maiden voyage. So I'm going to, you know, at a certain point, welcome you back telephonically, because this is the first time I've been able to broadcast from the studio here live, and I hope you enjoy the archives, at our new on-air phone number, 212-650-5782. 650-5782. But you know, we'll talk about all that in a little while. But tonight's program, and, you know, pardon my joy and confusion and fulfillment, but tonight's program is really, like in that movie, Proof of Life. And if anybody's been following this, that, or other thing, I hope you know how much I enjoy that phrase, proof of life. My name is Robert Knight, and this is Earthwatch.
A man to do, oh baby, I'll sacrifice for you, I'll even do wrong for you, oh baby, every minute, every hour, I'm gonna shower you with love and affection, look how it's coming in your direction. And I'm gonna use every trick in the book. I'll try my best to get your hood. Hey, baby.
Take me, I'm yours.
And every night, every day, I'm gonna say, I'm gonna get you, I'm gonna get you. Look out, boy, 'cause I'm gonna get you. I'm gonna make you.
every breath I take and each and every step I make brings me closer, baby, closer to you.
And with each beat of my heart, for every day we apart, I'll hunger for every wasted hour.
And I, every night and every day, I'm gonna get you, I'm gonna get you, look out, cause I'm gonna get you.
Oh, yeah, ain't that nice? That's kind of how I feel about y'all. I've missed you, you know, but we're back. And this is a Shakedown Cruise. This is the first post-March Madness live and alive broadcast of Earthwatch. And we're going to take your calls at 212-650-5782, 212-650-5782, shortly, in case you're interested to take part in this evolutionary voyage of discovery. I was going to open with that song you just heard, I'm Gonna Make You Love Me, by the Temps and Supremes, the Primes and the Primettes, because I have really enjoyed. I've seen two movies about a million times. One of them is the excellent production of the extraordinary executive called Suzanne DePass of Motown Records with the movie of The Temptations. And the other is a movie about the music behind The Temps and The Supremes and Martha and all the rest of them called Standing in the Shadows of Motown. And we can move to the future, but we must understand the rhythms and the beauty and harmony of our past, too. And so, pardon me if I play too long. Pardon me if I just riff on my joy at being here with you for the first time in a long time, live here on WBAI. And phone number is 212-650-5782. And let's see if I can make this phone thing work.
Hello?
Are you there?
Yeah, hello, it's me, Tom from the Bronx here.
Well, welcome.
I had written you on the Fukushima plant. I don't know whether you ever saw that letter.
Well, our mail is in transition, but make your point.
I had said that they talk about the atom bomb. Very little is talked about the hydrogen bomb. And there was an island that actually disintegrated. Did you know that when they tested it out?
Quawagene, right?
I don't know where it was. But
the Quawagene Atoll,
anyway,
which is part of the Pacific
anyway,
tests.
That's something to look into because in the United States, maybe it was Arizona or New Mexico, I don't know where. It was Western State. There was a big mountain.
A lot of tests in Nevada.
What?
A lot of nuclear tests in the state of Nevada.
They had a tunnel put right through it using a super force, and there was no debris to take away.
Mm, yeah. I hope that you're also listening these days to 5 o'clock Shadow because this week is very much focused on nuclear issues. On Monday, we address the fatal accident in the turbine section of the Arkansas Nuclear 1 plant and the shutdown of Arkansas Nuclear 2 with the loss of external power, which, as you know, Arne Gunderson has told us, that is the really Achilles heel of nuclear power plants. We think they produce energy, but they depend on external energy. And one of the things that we reported on Monday was that three or four people were injured and one killed when a million-pound stator, that's the base of a turbine, within the middle of which there is a rotor. And they were trying to fix it up at all on deliberate speed, and they killed a guy and wounded what they said was three or four. In the NRC initial report, they claimed four, but the Entergy Corporation, a day later, was found to have misspoken for some reason, as odd as that may seem for students of nuclear industry. And it turns out that, in fact, eight other workers were seriously injured in addition to the one killed. So that's the story we're following this week and as time may demand. And this is Earthwatch. I'm Robert Knight. The phone number here is area code 212-650-5782. 212-650-5782. Got some other things to share with you tonight, but I just want to take this moment of reconstructive reunion. See who's listening and what you're thinking. 212-650-5782. I sit here in the beauty of radio. You know, I've worked in television. I used to be on The Daily Show. And, you know, some things are a little bit different here at the City College of the City University of New York. And I am an artist of radio. You know, television is another thing. When you have the proper tools, you know, makeup, wardrobe, and camera director, and all of these things, then that's a different subject than being the victim of a spy cam. So, radio is magic because the vision of radio comes from you. So, well, you know, I got this attitude. I will not succumb to secondary. I've been in the most excellent television, and I will not settle for an adequate television. So, this is Earthwatch on WBAI. And let me see if I'm doing this right. And you are on the air. Hello. Well, all right, let's try the other one. I'm still, you know, learning the equipment. Are you there?
Oh, yes, I am.
Welcome.
Tonight is Jeremiah.
Oh, one of my heroes. Hey, I owe you a phone call, but we've been sick, we've been busy, but we're much better now, both personally and institutionally. Go ahead, Jeremiah. Are you there, my brother?
Well, Thursdays, while he was out of town, specifically to pitch, along with John Kane, a very knowledgeable Mohawk activist from Buffalo, New York.
Mm-hmm.
I called Hugh Hamilton's show, and I suggested something that I'd suggested in the past, which isn't some save the world solution. There's gonna have to be many solutions and a revamping, I think, for us to get up to speed with what's going on in our contemporary situation. But one of the suggestions I had was that BAI, you know, take all these great premiums that are offered on the various shows and make them all available at once in an online store so that when people are calling in to pledge, they are calling specifically for the transmitter, for the rent, and for the radio station, whereas all that other stuff could hopefully be available at, you know, not an inflated price, but just a reasonable price, and people can continue to support BAI throughout the year, you know, not only through pledging, but through the online store, an annual benefit concert, other local events happening in different communities around the city or even around the country, around the world, since it is, you know, obviously a worldwide phenomenon thanks to the web. But Hugh Hamilton, his response, and I love Brother Hugh, But his response was, well, you know, we're not really in that kind of business. That takes us into a whole other realm. And to me, that kind of thinking is part of the problem.
Well, now, so I'm still figuring out the interface here. But actually, Jeremiah, we do a thing like that already, which is the website give2wbai.org, in which either there or on the main website, you can actually look up the premiums and pledge for them. So we're you know, that's a very great and visionary suggestion, but we're on the path there. And I would also suggest that you might discuss this with our station manager, who's going to be giving a report to the listener tomorrow.
Yeah, actually, I hope I can tune in to at least half of that. I'll be teaching, and I'll have to download.
What do you teach?
Man, I've been teaching children how to play chess for over 10 years.
Yeah,
I teach chess 7 days a week.
You know, I'm specializing on the quiet opening, pawn to king 4.
Hey, well, you know, that's the tactical game right there, and then d4 is the positional game. So many a great player have chosen e4 and made a career out of it.
Well, now you see, I understand algebraic notation, but you know what? I'm a classic guy. I learned chess on a tablecloth with cutouts.
I
destroyed my grandmother's kitchen table. And I really like the old style notation because it's like playing, that game Battleship? You don't know what's in what square. But the old notation, the classic notation, says pawn to bishop 4, you know?
I you know, I teach my students both because they're both pretty easy, you know. Now all the modern books are all algebraic.
But I
like the old style too. That's how I learned how to play. But you know, my chess teacher, because although I teach chess, I also have my chess teacher, who's a sort of a famous Washington Square Park chess player.
They are monsters. They are so deceptive in their excellence, aren't they?
Oh, yeah, but Russian Paul, he's not just a street hustler. He's that, but he's also a world-class player. I literally saw him play a Cuban grandmaster 12 hours straight, 2 minutes on each clock, hundreds and hundreds of games.
Wow. Capablanca, baby.
Capablanca is the greatest movie that's never been made. A lot of people don't know that there was a Cuban world champion of chess from 1921.
He was pretty smart. He was pretty smart. He was both pretty and smart.
He was. And you know what enraged the chess establishment about Capablanca? Is that, you know, the European chess establishment considered chess to be, you know, the highest intellectual pursuit. So they were outraged that this Cuban was dominating the game and then had the nerve to say that to him, chess was just a table game and his main interest was diplomacy and commerce.
Uh-oh.
That's why Aliekin never gave him a rematch. He toiled day and night to prepare for his match with Capablanca, won in one of the greatest matches in the history of the World Chess Championship, and then did everything in his power to make sure Capablanca never got a rematch.
You remind me of Paul Mooney. Cuban had a brain.
But also, you know, it's another quick point I want to make. Because I've spoken on your program before, and I made the point that, you know, I feel Barack Obama is a war criminal.
Yes, sir.
And I chose to vote for him.
Me too.
You did. I didn't think you did. But in any case, I just wanted to make a point because it's sort of an obvious thing that people will naturally go to. Well, why didn't you support the third party candidate? And I just wanted to quickly mention as an addition to the statements I made on Earthwatch, I don't know, however many months ago. Which is that I really would like to see a third and a fourth and fifth party emerge in our political system. But what I would really like to see out of whether it's the Green Party or the Independence Party or what have you is please make yourself visible in the community.
Yeah.
If you're just running for president, no, I don't endorse that. If I'm going to vote for somebody who's not going to win, I'll vote for myself.
Well, I heard our current president used to be a community disorganizer.
Yeah, right. That was a nice little preliminary PR move on his part. Look, a lot of people say Barack Obama, oh, well, you know, he's so intelligent. Look, if the National Defense Authorization Act is your response or your you know, the culmination, I should say, of all of your scholarship, you went to Harvard to study the Constitution, and then you produced the NDAA, I don't give you a feather in your cap for being an intelligent guy. That seems like a pretty wild misinterpretation.
Well, actually, that's
the document you spent so much time studying.
That's actually not where I would have put the feather.
Yeah, right. And it might not have been a feather either, right?
No, I am not advocating any illegal act or violence. But I'm just saying that there is a tickling that has occurred, as if with a feather, by the falsity of the promise and the tragedy of the fulfillment, whether it be about war, whether it be about the annihilation of Medicare and Social Security and the fake cost of living non-increases that this Obama administration is inducing, or his signing of a bill that gives even further domain to Monsanto and its monster genetically produced.
One after another, not to mention
the damn wars.
The damn wars is right. Look, let me tell you something. My mother raised me to be vehemently against war, and that has stuck with me. I find that war is such an abomination and such a tragedy, and I'll say that personally as somebody who is a professional musician. I've been playing the electric bass professionally for 16 years. I've been teaching children how to play chess for 10 years. I've been studying martial arts since I was a kid. I'm also an information junkie, hence I'm listening to Earth Watch in the middle of the night. But the point is that life is so precious. How could you kill a young person? How could you end someone's life before it naturally ends? Maybe someone is 30 years old and they're going to discover their passion for something at the age of 40 and will have crystallized that endeavor by the age of 60 or 70. You know, just how we could rob people of their lives and how we could take such a cavalier attitude about just this wanton destruction. I mean, you know, it's like Chomsky has pointed out so many times. We are just such a deeply totalitarian society. And not talking about just the warmongers who start these wars. The people who sit idly by feeling anything other than outrage.
Ah.
To kill a million Iraqi people, 5 million orphans.
Starving them softly with our son.
Yeah. And I mean, the invasion of Libya, which, you know, and that's what I point out, too. Everyone quickly swept that one under the rug.
Jeremiah, that is the most African invasion I have ever seen in my life. And I've studied colonial history, and I know about slavery, Middle Passage, and all this, that, and the other thing. But Libya, under the Jamahiriya, was the most progressive and endowable nation
standards, in terms of
with education. I have actually been there, and they were about to move from the dollar to the African dinar, much like Asia and Australia. I believe China and Australia are about to move to the euro from the American dollar, which is the single military economic thing that makes the invasions of America possible. To see that it took a Negro president to overthrow the most advanced African nation just brings me goddamn near to tears.
Yeah, it really is horrendous. And, you know, and it just makes me so upset when I see people who really know better going out of their way to justify these things, to be apologists for these things. You should have more solidarity with any victim in any one of these horrendous wars, and any of the power brokers who either initiated these wars or stood idly by as these wars were initiated.
Well, Jeremiah, you know how I try and ameliorate my African rage at the crimes of Obama is to also understand that African-American descendants of slaves are an abused people.
Yeah, you're right about that.
And Just as we had the old poetic mythos of Shine. I don't know if you ever heard about Shine, Shine, the ocean blue, swimming, da, 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 da. It was a folk tale. It was the Black Beowulf. Look it up. It's like legendary stories about Django. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And part of our defensive mechanism as people in America of African heritage is to unquestioningly support people of similar hue because of our overwhelming knowledge of racism.
Absolutely.
And therefore an Obama can slip through every now and then.
Oh yeah. Well, I don't even know if he slipped through. Did he slip through? You know, does a guy slip through to being manager of the Yankees, or is he selected? Is he vetted? That's my argument. Is look at professional sports. It is very scientific. You have trainers in every aspect of physical training. You have nutritionists. You have sports psychologists. You have scouting every game that every team in the league is playing every night. So you can have that playbook when you face that opponent. Now, well, how do you think it is in power politics? You know?
Yeah.
You think they're going to let some black guy just dance his way into the limelight and undermine their structures and institutions of power?
In other words, we're not living in the world of Putney Swope.
Yeah, no. There's no random factor here. These are controlled. These are regulated institutions. They're rich people with power, and they don't want things to get out of hand. So to me, the Barack Obama thing was the system playing good cop, bad cop with itself, pretty much.
You know, I had this conversation earlier, and the Obama syndrome among the Republicans who are conspiring to steal Social Security, the thing that everybody's already paid for, to get rid of the post office, which is very self-sufficient except for Congress and Obama not stopping that, of putting in like a multi-decade prior payment of things not due yet. This Obama administration has been a disaster for populist democracy. And it has been a paralyzing agent. It has been a narcotizer of progressive protest.
Yep. It's you know, and what I love the term that Jeremy Scahill uses, which is that, you know, we cannot continue perpetuating this unfounded hypothesis that Barack Obama and individuals like him are somehow playing, quote-unquote, fifth-dimensional chess. Murder is murder. Stop with this rationale that, oh, we had to kill 10 people over here to save 100 over there.
Hypothetically.
That's not okay.
Hypothetically.
That is not okay.
That's
like people tell, you know what the argument is? People say, you know, well, Barack Obama, you don't understand. In that position of power, he has to make all of his decisions with a gun to his head. And you know what I have to say to that? Is if you put a gun to my head and tell me you have to go across the street and kill those 5 children in the playground, and if you don't do that, I'm going to blow up a shopping mall on the other side of town, I'm going to say, you can blow up a shopping mall or do whatever you're going to do. I'm not killing any children.
1 out of 100 ain't bad.
Right.
We're speaking with Jeremiah of Earth Driver and so many other beautiful things. I've had the pleasure of seeing you in concert and
studio. I've had a breakthrough this year. I think I've done my best solo shows of my career just in these past couple months. I'm actually going to be opening up for a group called Soul Understated at the Highline Ballroom on April 22nd. And
Wow, go on. Tell me.
Well, you know, it's funny. What I like is that Soul Understated, and I need to get familiar with their music because I'm not familiar with it yet. Apparently, they're a political group, and I was asked to do this because I guess, identified as a political artist. So for once in my life, it paid off to be a leftist.
Wow.
It got me one gig, you know.
I must tell the audience, you've got to go see Jeremy because You are one of the most personable, easy soul, musically educated performers I've ever had the pleasure to know.
Oh, I really, really appreciate that, man. And I'm a huge fan of yours. I'm a huge fan of 5 o'clock Shadow and what you guys are doing, you know, over there, keeping the truth out there. I'm so adamant about saving BAI. I really think everyone needs to answer the call here. And, you know, and I've said it when I pitched on Teokasin's show, don't complain about BAI. You know, be a part of the solution. I could write a book about what's wrong with BAI, but that's not the point. We need BAI. If we lose this station, it's a tragedy of immense proportion. It enfeebles every other thing that we're trying to do.
It's now or never. Our love won't resuscitate.
And you know, and I've had an incredible experience telling people about BAI during this crisis, and I encourage other people to do the same. You know. It's time to, like, I heard one of the comedians who was promoting the benefit comedy show last week.
Mm-hmm.
He was saying, you know, it's not okay that you know, it's your nephew who you talk to every weekend or whatever the case may be doesn't know that you listen to BAI every day. You know, it's not okay to not mention this now to your coworkers.
Like, ah, good.
Go out and start a conversation. You know what's a great lesson I learned in my days of college activism? Is I went to a rally for open admissions at CUNY. And, you know, I went to the rally and it was drizzling a little and not a lot of people were out there. And I went back to the office and my friend who was working on the radical student paper at the time, he said, "Why aren't you at the rally?" And I said, "Man, there was hardly anyone there. You know, if people don't care about it, why should I care?" And he immediately got in my face. He said, "It was your job to get people to that rally."
Good answer.
He said, "You're a popular guy, man. You have friends in all different circles. You could have gotten 100 people to that rally."
Was that the radical?
I think you could just show up, and everything's supposed to be this built-in movement.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then he talked about the civil rights movement and how, you know, people don't want to talk about the 50s. They talk about the glory days and the fun and exciting things that happened in the 60s, but they don't talk about the 10-year buildup of people getting doors slammed in their faces
mm-hmm.
9 out of 10 times to build up that movement.
Truth crushed to earth.
Yes, and that's what, you know, with like John Henrik Clark has talked about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, showbiz liberation. Real liberation, as he put it, the unglamorous off-camera work.
Yes.
Has to be done.
By the way, I'm working off-camera tonight. Because that TV camera does not have a union contract.
Yeah, right.
But Jeremiah, you know, you speak about prior times in black leadership, and how did we have a Powell and settled for an Obama?
Have a Powell?
We used to have Adam Clayton Powell,
right,
most powerful man at the United States Congress, and they got him.
Yep.
And then they gave us Obama.
Different era in politics, wouldn't you say?
Well, listen, I'm going to say goodbye, but tell us how to find out what you're doing next.
Oh, yeah. Well, first of all, I want to let everybody know we're doing a new series, a new music series at the Brecht Forum, which is going to be the fourth Sunday of every month. I just kicked it off last month, but we're going to have another one April 28th, and I'm really encouraging folks to come out to the Brecht, because what we're trying to do is we're trying to introduce folks to some of the really incredible independent artists who are part of the scene, who are part of the community and part of the movement, who, you know, for whatever reason, weren't invited on the popular television to share their truth. But we're trying to, A, get the community aware of these artists and also give members of the BAI community, the Brecht Forum community, progressive community, what have you, just a chance to meet up with friends, old and new. We need more spaces where we can have dialogues and come up with solutions. So please remember the Brecht Forum series, fourth Sunday of every month. Next one is April 28th. And please go to earthdriver.org. That's my website. We have tons of music there, not just mine. We also have great interviews. I interviewed Teokasin Ghost Horse, which I really would like you guys to take the time to check out. It's It's available for free download. I interviewed the great Ornette Coleman in his living room, which is a trip.
Oh, wow.
I interview you, Robert. I'd really love to schedule an interview with you and get that up there. But we'll be in touch. I'm not going to block up the line anymore. Check out earthdriver.org. Love what you're doing, Robert, and let's catch up soon, my brother.
Okay, thank you, Jeremy. I hope you enjoy what follows. I have gotten so many emails, almost universally laudatory, with maybe one or two capitals, about the historicity that I recently displayed in regard to the Nobel Peace Prize, and who's worthy and who's not. WBAI originated a song, or was the first to broadcast and popularize a song now rarely known called Nobel Peace My Ass, Nobel Peace My Ass. If Henry Kissinger deserves it, so do I. And here we stand today, when on the very week that Barack Obama trebled the number of troops in Afghanistan and put in twice as many as George Bush before him, we find that pretender accepting the Nobel Peace Prize. And I try to corral that history acoustically. And it was presented recently on 5 o'clock shadow because of the launching of a campaign by rootsaction.org. And everybody listening would do well maybe to check that out to get a little bit of clarity about the tribal fallacies of warmongers who walk among us. And they have initiated two petitions. One of them is to name Private First Class Bradley Manning as the Nobel laureate this year for his unique, not since Daniel Ellsberg and the Pentagon Papers release of information that educated us all in regard to the true face of American foreign policy with his release to WikiLeaks. The second part of the initiative at rootsaction.org is to revoke the fake trophy of Barack Obama for his receipt of the Nobel Peace Prize. And contemplating these things, I produce the following mix, which I hope and think will speak acoustically to the falsity of Barack Obama, the fond, and I use fond in the dictionary sense, tribal allegiance to him among some, but the increasing consciousness among people of color, despite reactionaries who try to tell us we should love what he do. And I thought about the difference between Barack Obama and Martin Luther King. 1964, that Nobel Prize meant something to the world. 2009, wasn't worth a dime. This is Earthwatch. I'm Robert Knight. And here's how we try to acoustically analyze that contradiction.
Your Majesty, Your Royal Highness, Mr. President, Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen.
I accept the Nobel Prize for Peace.
At a moment when 22 million Negroes of the United States
are engaged in a creative battle
to end the long night of racial injustice,
I accept this award
on behalf of the civil rights movement which is moving with determination
and a majestic scorn for risk and danger. To establish a reign of freedom and a rule of justice.
Our mindful
led only yesterday in Birmingham, Alabama.
Our children crying out for brotherhood were answered with
fire hoses,
snarling dogs,
and even death.
I am mindful that only yesterday in Philadelphia, Mississippi, young people
seeking to secure the right to vote
were brutalized and murdered.
And only yesterday, more than 40 houses of worship in the state of Mississippi alone were bombed or burned because they offered a sanctuary to those who would not accept segregation.
I am mindful that debilitating and grinding poverty afflicts my people and chains them to the lowest rung of the economic ladder.
Therefore, I must ask why this prize is awarded to a movement which is beleaguered and committed to unrelenting struggle.
To a movement which has not yet won the very peace and brotherhood which is the essence of the Nobel Prize.
After contemplation, I conclude that this award which I receive on behalf of that movement is profound recognition
that nonviolence is the answer to the crucial political and moral questions of our time.
The need for man to overcome oppression and violence without resorting to violence and oppression.
Civilization and violence
are antithetical concepts. Negroes of the United States, following the people of India, have demonstrated that nonviolence is not sterile passivity,
but a powerful moral force which makes for social transformation.
Sooner or later, all the people of the world will have to discover a way to live together in peace
and thereby transform this pending cosmic elegy
into a creative psalm of brotherhood.
If this is to be achieved,
man must evolve for all human conflict
a method which rejects revenge, aggression, and retaliation.
The foundation of such a method is love.
The tortuous road which has led from Montgomery, Alabama to Oslo bears witness to this truth.
This is a road over which millions of Negroes are traveling
to find a new sense of dignity.
This same road has opened for all Americans a new era of progress and hope.
It has led to a new civil rights bill, and it will, I am convinced,
be widened and lengthened into a superhighway of justice.
As Negro and white men in increasing numbers
create alliances to overcome their common problems, I accept this award today with an abiding faith in America
and an audacious faith in the future of mankind. I refuse to accept despair as the final response to the ambiguities of history. I refuse to accept the idea that man is mere flotsam and jetsam in the river of life, unable to influence the unfolding events which surround him.
This is why right temporarily defeated is stronger than evil triumphant. I believe that even amid today's mortar bursts and whining bullets, there is still hope for a brighter tomorrow. Yet when years have rolled past, and when the blazing light of truth is focused on this marvelous age in which we live, men and women will know and children will be taught that we have a finer land, a better people, a more noble civilization, because these humble children of God were willing to suffer for righteousness' sake. I think Alfred Nobel would know what I mean when I say I accept this award in the spirit of a curator of some precious heirloom which he holds in trust for its true owners. All those to whom truth is beauty, and beauty truth, and in whose eyes the beauty of genuine brotherhood and peace is more precious than diamonds, or silver, or gold. Thank you.
As Commander-in-Chief, I have determined that it is in our vital national interest to send an additional 30,000 U.S. troops to Afghanistan. These are the resources that we need to seize the initiative while building the Afghan capacity that can allow for a responsible transition of our forces out of Afghanistan. I make this decision because I am convinced that our security is at stake in Afghanistan and Pakistan. This is the epicenter of violent extremism practiced by Al-Qaeda. It is from here that we were attacked on 9/11, and it is from here that new attacks are being plotted as I speak. This is no idle danger, no hypothetical threat, and this danger will only grow if the region slides backwards and Al-Qaeda can operate with impunity. The people and governments of both Afghanistan and Pakistan are in danger, and the stakes are even higher within a nuclear-armed Pakistan because we know that Al-Qaeda and other extremists seek nuclear weapons, and we have every reason to believe that they would use them. These facts compel us to act along with our friends and allies. Our overarching goal remains the same: to disrupt, dismantle, and defeat Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan and Pakistan, and to prevent its capacity to threaten America and our allies in the future. To meet that goal, we must deny Al-Qaeda a safe haven. We must reverse the Taliban's momentum and deny it the ability to overthrow the government. And we must strengthen the capacity of Afghanistan's security forces and government so that they can take lead responsibility for Afghanistan's future. We will pursue a military strategy that will break the Taliban's momentum and increase Afghanistan's capacity over the next 18 months. The 30,000 additional troops that I'm announcing tonight will deploy in the first part of 2010, the fastest possible pace, so that they can target the insurgency and secure key population centers.
These military advisors keep saying, send us more troops, and that if you just do that, that we're about to turn the corner, that there's light at the end of the tunnel. I just have a hard time swallowing that. Obama has already ordered 21,000 more troops to Afghanistan in March, so this will be the second escalation since he's taken office. So the military people keep giving this advice, and they did exactly the same thing in Vietnam. And the president at the time, Lyndon Johnson, complied with it and said, well, they must know what they're talking about. And in the end, they really didn't. There has to be a will and a viability for domestic leadership, and it can't rely so heavily on outside forces. And basically, we can't win the war for the current government of Afghanistan, whether it's NATO or American troops. And yet the truth is that things are going steadily in the wrong direction. And I think at some point we have to really change strategy. We are taking essentially a militaristic approach. We are not having any significant humanitarian surge. I mean, at this point, only 1,000 additional humanitarian workers have been ordered compared to now with tonight's announcement. It'll be something like 55,000 to 60,000 additional troops will have been ordered under President Obama. This newest escalation really moves us toward another 10 years of involvement, which basically makes it a two-decade war at a minimum, and I don't realistically see any good end point to get out even after 20 years. So the American people really don't support this, and I think now is the time to say no. The deeper we get in, the more of a quagmire and quicksand we're in, and it gets harder and harder. We lose more and more troops, more and more innocent Afghanis get killed, and we just drive more and more people into the arms of the Taliban and of Al-Qaeda, ultimately. So I think this is a counterproductive strategy, and I think the president has really failed us. You know, he's about to get the Nobel Peace Prize in less than a week. How can you be honoring a president whose basic approach is a militaristic approach? War is really not the answer. And I think anybody who gets the Nobel Peace Prize had better understand that.
There comes a time when silence is betrayal. The truth of these words is beyond doubt.
But the mission to which they call us is the most difficult one. Even when pressed by the demands of inner truth, men do not easily assume the task of opposing their government's policy, especially in time of war. Nor does the human spirit move without great difficulty against all the apathy of conformist thought within one's own bosom. There has never been such a monumental dissent during a war by the American people. Polls reveal that almost 15 million Americans explicitly oppose the war in Vietnam. Additional millions cannot bring themselves around to support it. This reveals that millions have chosen to move beyond the prophesying of smooth patriotism to the high grounds of firm dissent based upon the mandates of conscience and the reading of history. Now, of course, one of the difficulties in speaking out today grows out of the fact that there are those who are seeking to equate dissent with disloyalty. And it's a dark day in our nation when high-level authorities will seek to use every method to silence dissent. Something is happening and people are not going to be silent. The truth must be told. I'm disappointed with our failure to deal positively and forthrightly with the triple evils of racism, economic exploitation, and militarism. We are presently moving down a dead-end road that can lead to national disaster. Tomorrow may be too late, and don't let anybody make you think that God chose America as his divine messianic force to be a sort of policeman of the whole world. God has a way of standing before the nations with judgment, and it seems that I can hear God saying to America, "You are too arrogant. I'm not in despair. I haven't lost faith, because the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends toward justice. We shall overcome because the Bible is right. You shall reap what you sow." With this faith, we will be able to speed up the day when justice will roll down like waters and righteousness like a mighty stream. With this faith, we will be able to speed up the day when the lion and the lamb will lie down together, and every man will sit under his own vine and fig tree, and none shall be afraid, because the words of the Lord have spoken it. With this faith, we will be able to speed up the day when all over the world we will be able to join hands and sing in the words of the old Negro spiritual, "Free at last, free at last, thank God Almighty, we are free at last." With this faith, men will beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. And nations will not rise up against nations, neither shall they study war anymore. And I don't know about you, I ain't gonna study war no more.
Sometimes a man smiles,
I often wonder
child is a thinker by the faraway look in his eyes. The faraway look in his eyes. A pity for his thoughts can make him richer. His eyes can see what other eyes could not. What is the power of the Lord? Not mere power, but magnetism.
And magnetism
is more intelligent than force. Magnetism is more intelligent than
we welcome your comments, suggestions, leaks, and queries with an email to theshadow@wbai.org. I'm Robert Knight in New York.
Have you ever felt the presence of rain? We're all standing amidst the surprise. Sometimes
this is Earthwatch on WBAI New York, streaming at WBAI.org. And we're getting a lot of response tonight, including from Bill Smirnov, who apparently might be listening because I just a short time ago got this email. it's a very funny incidental. It says, did Adolf Hitler ever win the Nobel Peace Prize? And I just love the premise right there. But the actual answer, apparently, according to Bill, is no. Hitler was nominated, much like Obama, for the Nobel Peace Prize in 1939 on the basis of the peaceful resolution of the Sudetenland crisis. But the nomination was rejected by the Nobel Prize Committee back before they were as deep as they were in 2009 in historical revisionism. This all took place before Hitler started World War II. In addition to never winning, Hitler forbade any German to accept any Nobel Prize. When the Nobel Committee announced that the 1935 Peace Prize had been awarded to German journalist Karl von Ossietzky, the German government forbade him to accept the award. But indeed, much like Barack Obama, Adolf Hitler was nominated for the Nobel Prize in 1939. This is Earthwatch. I'm Robert Knight, and we're getting calls and stuff, so let's see what y'all are thinking tonight on this not maiden voyage, but shakedown cruise of our live adventures with the equipment here at our fine new studios at City College, courtesy of WHCR and a lot of work on the part of the staff of and administration of WBAI. So let's see if I've... a number of things are different. Are you on the air?
Yes, I am.
I should be asking you that, but telling you that. But hey, welcome.
Hello, Robert. Linda calling in from Princeton. I wanted to offer a suggestion. I have been diligently calling a rabid right-wing radio AM station in Philadelphia, CBS affiliate, which goes out over 38 states and into the two eastern provinces of Canada. Now, their broadcast day lasts from 6 a.m. to 1 a.m. the following day. Several nights a week, one of their hosts is a former Arizona congressman born in North Carolina, a pretty right-wing character, Tea Party guy named J.D. Hayworth. I don't know whether you're familiar with him. He served in the Congress.
I'm familiar with North Carolina, but not that person.
Yeah, Arizona is where he was a representative, however. He later moved to Arizona. Anyway, he was in the Congress, I think, for 8 years in the 90s, early 2000s. What I wanted to suggest, I mean, I can give out the call letters for the station and the phone number, which is toll-free, and you can call it if you have AT&T or Verizon Wireless. You can just push pound 1210. You know, I'm one of maybe three or four people to the left who call in regularly, and we get on, and we get to speak for quite a long time. And I engage this man maybe two or three nights a week. I don't hear many people calling in from New York City or anywhere else, but they call from as far afield as Ohio, Florida, Texas. And I would like to encourage people. It's a very easy station to get on. And I wish some people on the left from this area, the tri-state area at least, would call in. I can give the phone number.
Well, let's just leave it as an informational thing. I'm not asserting that people sabotage any other radio station because...
Oh, no,
like
I'm not talking about sabotaging it. Mm-hmm. You mean sabotaging the station at the...
Or crank it, or whatever
you
want to call
it.
Oh,
no, I'm not talking about that. I go on as a serious person.
I can okay, so give us the information.
Okay. The phone number, the toll-free phone number...
Hello? I swear to God, I didn't do that. I did not do that. Anyway, here, let's have some more callers at area code 212-650-5782. This is Earthwatch on WBAI. I'm Robert Knight in New York, and I'm really interested in your comments about the falsity of negritude. And you know, I really, in addition to trying to fulfill Pacifica's mission of seeking peace by understanding among nations to end the causes of war, to also defeat the tribalism that has so impeded this very institution for so many years, I'm really looking for some new and cogent thoughts on these issues. Once again, 212-650-5782. And, let's see, you're on the air, I think.
Robert, it is moi again. Can I give you the phone number and the call letter?
Just do it quick, because we're near the end. Say it in 10 seconds.
Okay, toll-free number is 1-855-839-1210. The call letters are AM, WPHT, Philadelphia. 12:10 a.m.
Well, I ask our listeners to be considerate and courteous and, non-disruptive. But here's to the spreading of debate. This is Earthwatch, however, on WBAI in New York, Pacifica Radio, broadcasting at 99.5 megahertz FM. And you're on the air. You're on the air.
Oh, Robert, hi. This is Susan from Brooklyn.
Welcome.
And I just found out about two things. One is there's this book written by an economist called How We Lost the Economy. I heard him being interviewed, Paul Craig Roberts, on the Gary Knowles Show. And basically he said we've got, the FDIC has like $225 billion to cover like $9 trillion worth of accounts. So don't be surprised if you go into Bank of America someday, try to take out your money and get offered some shares in the bank instead, literally. And then the other thing is a piece of news I heard from my mother, who has a degree in political science and has good information and usually gets it before other people that I know, at least. And she basically said that George W. Bush very quietly made a deal with the Chinese, giving them eminent domain of the entire country, the United States of America, so that whenever they need to call in a debt or whatever, they can just claim eminent domain. And I just
Well, eminent domain means real estate. I assume that you actually mean financial issues of trade imbalance.
No, I mean the actual physical country and everything.
I don't believe that.
And even if it were true, don't you think that it would be illegal for a president to be able to do something like that in secret?
You know, illegal is a matter best discussed by lawyers. But thank you. Thank you for calling.
Okay, thanks.
This is Earthwatch. We're having many calls, at least as many as I can see, two at a time. We only have two extensions here, so please forgive my brevity. You're on the air.
Robert, I don't wish to be on the air again. I wanted to leave a voicemail. I thought there was
Okay, then send me an email to rknight, R-K-N-I-G-H-T, at wbai.org. Thank you. Well, we've done enough. We've done enough.
I don't want people to crank phone call. That was
I know you don't.
Okay.
It was my incumbency to have said so.
Maybe people
enjoy we're good. We're good.
Okay. Thank you, Robert.
Good night. Thank you. This is Earthwatch on WBAI. Phone number 212-650-5782. And as I was intimating earlier, I believe that people of goodwill and peace and spirit and communion and global community are faced with a challenge of evolution, and that the old paradigms of skin privilege, and in a tragic way in America with the tradition of slavery and history, and the defensive mechanisms of underclasses, quite logically, during the time of maximum oppression, giving great credence to others of similar characteristics. But as information and permeability of barriers changes these days, I do not believe that a simple concept of tribalism, certainly the historicity of such things, must always be remembered and evolved. But when I hear simplistic things being said, well, Obama's a brother, or we need women in positions of power. Well, how about gold in my ear? How about that fool who ran from Alaska for the vice president? Hillary Clinton is a woman. Remember what she said when she and Obama destroyed the most progressive African nation on the continent? She cackled. We came when she was informed of the murder and sodomy of Muammar al-Qaddafi. That evil thing cackled. Really? Well, we came, we saw, he died. Tribalism. There are many people who say, well, we need women, you know, to run the State Department. Well, Hillary Clinton was a woman. Is that what you really want? I'm saying that tribalism and gender or, you know, like self-identifying specificity without moral and ethical judgment is a recipe for collective suicide. Madeleine Albright was a woman. Huh? Barack Obama was black. In my moral universe, these are insufficient conditions to ensure the embetterment and embiggening of the species. I'm just wondering what you think about that. Hello, you're on the air.
The worst thing that Hillary Clinton ever said to me, was she said, the people of Haiti have to wait for assistance. I thought that was very, very low of her to say that after they're living in the mud, literally, and everything else.
You know what burns my potato is that there are dumbass liberals who think that she should be a viable candidate for presidency in 2016. I swear to God, I'm not making this up. Phone number here is 212-650-5782. And we're in the closing minutes. Soon coming up will be Hour of the Wolf with Jim Freund. And I want you all to help my thinking on this. I am from the South. I've seen a different kind of racism than you know in New York. And I've seen the same kind of racism here in New York. And I just think that collective adaptive intelligence requires a higher criterion than similarity of appearance or co-participation in gender. Because, you know, remember what Thurgood Marshall says. There's white snakes and then there's black snakes. And we stand here now that our elders who taught us such things are about to be starved. You know, some folks here in the station were joking earlier about Obama's tricky little, you know, he, instead of the real cost of living increase, Obama administration has concocted consumer price index diminishment of the real value of Social Security. Already, this pretender is lessening the benefits of people who have spent the time of their lives in work and have paid into a thing where he goes along with the Republicans as if there's a difference between them and the Democrats, in order to reduce the payback of what all of us have put into Social Security and to destroy the post office. And I'm just trying to overcome the stupor of narcosis that tribalism has brought us to this day. Is anybody running with me? Do you understand what I'm saying? 212-650-5782. In future programming, I intend to indicate how Obama's also caved into the genetic modifying agricultural industry. Any rational or ethical judgment of this disastrous presidency would indicate that no matter what was said by who, we can get fooled again. This is Earthwatch. Phone number. We have about 3 minutes left. Phone number is area code 212-650-5782. Speak now or forever hold it. In the meantime, let me see if I can work this CD thing. I want to give the next program a discrete interval. And this would be a good time for me to play my theme as outro music. Because, once again, this is not our maiden voyage, but just a shakedown cruise. And it's been so good to hear from you tonight. And let me try a little bit of technical magic here. I'd like to be courteous, you know, and you know, close to time. And let me see how I might do this. Okay, we're running at 27:45 according to the clock here. And if I actually do this, All I have to do is take 15 seconds to say, Thank you for listening tonight to Earthwatch. And you waited very long. You've got the last word.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call. I figured, I know...
You've got about 30 seconds.
Be closing. I just wanted to mention that I had actually had heard on the Tom Hartman show, The Big Picture, that they are holding, organizing on freespeech.org to organize a huge campaign for the third-party candidates. And they're holding a big conference.
Okay, just tell us where to be in touch with it.
I believe it's freespeech.org, and I had called Tom Hartman's television show.
Oh, okay, okay, that's enough.
And spoke about BAI.
Oh, good for you. Send me an email. Send me an email to.
I don't have a computer. I have the radio.
Well, then write me a letter. Robert Knight, WBAI, 160 Convent Avenue, New York.
Okay.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you so much.
And for those of you who are digerate, take a minute to think about going to the website rootsaction.org and tell them who you think should have or not have a Nobel Peace Prize. Thank you for listening tonight. Coming up next, Hour of the Wolf with Jim Freund. Thank you for listening and helping my maiden voyage reach fulfillment. Thank you. I love you. I'm alive. The station is alive. And because of that, we can all be better.
When will we all stop and see? When will we find what we've been missing? That the man in the moon must have found. 'Cause he looks upon us with a frown. Light of truth we won't let shine. Light of truth we won't let shine. Tell me, has the world gone blind? Light of truth we won't let shine. As long as there's life, there's still a day. As long as there's life, there's still a day. And I know that we can find our way. For as long as there's life, there's still a day.
I'm on? What do you mean I'm on?
Oh, yeah. Backstage.
I'm on, he says. Well, you know, first of all, I think it's rather presumptuous. Second of all, oh, dear, it's good to see you in person, man.
And, you know, I'd love some second all. Oh, I'm sorry.
The second of all, which is the new version in which they've cut out all the useless part.
Oh, okay.
You know, which is, you know, and users don't need the useless part, right? Or something like
you'd
that. Which means that you
be
know.
Surprised.
Which means that you know that you're tuned to listen to a sponsored non-commercial Pacifica Radio in New York.
Okay.
You know what?
I
like this console better than the old one. I don't. Arms are
some
only.
Some of the cue clues are different, and the phone system acts illogically. But here we are.
Outside of that, however.
Yeah. Really. Yeah. Exactly. So let's see. So da da da. I've got this. I've actually got my theme music on my keychain there. So I've got to figure it out, and there it is. Good.
Oh, what key? What key?
A minor.
From Stevie Wonder fingertips. Part
yes.
It's all, also, Fire Sign Theater.
Oh, this is frisky.
but that's really great one, Mrs. President. The point being, you see, that you take the list of seven words.
Oh, yes. Oh, right.
That's it. So all you have to say is, my God, how can you be such a five? Or
you know what, Jim? Three you.
Really, you know, and that's how it works, because people know the list of seven words, right? So all we have to do...
SPCCMF, actually, I think I differ with the order. I think this is...
Not that they mean...
People like us, we know these things.
Yes.
We're Batman.
Darn straight. But people like us also know...
What is actually playing on the radio at this moment?
What you're hearing.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Oh, no! Bye!
Take care, Robert. Good seeing you. Okay, well, and given all of this insanity, you know that means that you're tuned to listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica Radio in New York City, WBAI, vibrating 99.5 million times every second. Yeah, I did press it. It's just slow. There we howl. Good morning. This is Hour of the Wolf, a weekly program dedicated to science fiction, fantasy, enchantment, and the imagination. My name is Jim Freund. With me this morning, one of our most important guests always, Richard Bowes, reading a fairy tale and from the all-time classic, Minions of the Moon. This is, as mentioned, WBAI in New York City, and we are broadcasting. Again, I can't get quite used to the idea, the fact that we are broadcasting from Harlem, from CCNY, And let's just say that the move from Wall Street to CCNY is a, well, major change in the life of the radio station. Yes, Rick?
I would say so.
Yeah.
Major social change.
Yeah. Now, I am not a person, being a high school dropout, used to the university environment. Not that I've taken in much since I'm only coming in here so far late at night.
Well, I've spent most of my life, even though I have absolutely no interest in education, I've spent most of my life around universities. That's true.
Yeah.
And libraries, too. And
yeah. At the same time.
At the same time. Yeah.
Because you were...
even though I never learned to read.
That's an amazing thing. Do you get somebody to read the stories you write to you? Is that how it works? You buy the audio books of all of your work, and that's how you...
That's how I do
That's
it.
How you proofread them and stuff? Yeah, I was wondering about that.
Well, we don't talk about proofreading. That's a,
oh, okay. Yeah.
That's a sad and terrible subject.
It really is. Proofreading, copy editing. Ah, yes.
You know, punctuation, all of those
punctuation,
things.
Punctuation, yes. Once upon a time, they also had looms. You know,
that's before my time.
Somewhat. Unfortunately, for a lot of our listeners, proofreading and punctuation were probably, and grammar, is before their time. So,
well, yeah, it. I have no use for punctuation.
So we should, for those who have not heard you on this program before, how many times have you been on the show now?
Goodness, I don't know.
I think we're easily into double digits.
Oh, more than easily into double digits. It's been over the last, I think it was when I was pushing Minions of the Moon in its original incarnation.
That's right.
That I came on when here. That'd be about 15 years ago.
Yeah, Kevin had already been collected into one volume at that point.
Well, that was what Minions was. But yeah, I think I was on here in like 98. Came out in 99, but I think I was on here in 98. And mm-hmm. I've been on a couple of times a year ever since. So
yeah.
I think we're more than in double digits.
Yeah, and on some of my most important shows.
That is true. That is true. The first one that you did in the new time slot I was on.
That's correct.
Yes. That was
very intentional on my part.
That's right. It was Thanksgiving morning at 1:30. I came on and read something totally inappropriate.
Yeah, I had considered having you on the first program out of these studios, but you were unavailable.
Really?
So yes, I had spoken to you, so I got instead Terrence Taylor.
A suitable replacement.
Well, yeah, he also, it was a pitching morning. You know, it was a lot of begging for money.
Groveling.
A lot of groveling.
Which I like to do. I like to grovel, but usually it's for personal gain rather than...
I was going to say, please, I don't need too much information, but that would be a good joke for Terrence anyway.
Terrence is great at this. The only problem is he's so beautifully dressed, and you can't see that on radio.
Oh, you didn't see the Twitter picture I put out of him? I got a really nice photo of him. I got a really good one of Daniel Jose Older last week. If you
yes.
want,
yeah. Well, he's again. You miss a lot on radio.
I will be taking one of you while you read this morning. You are forewarned. I also am now taking 360-degree photos, which guarantee I won't be in them because I'm at the center of the fulcrum. Well, I'm in a swivel chair.
Taking the back pictures of the back of my head. I don't like those pictures.
No. It's from the it's the inside out that
the
I take.
The inside out.
Yes.
Oh, there are going to be pictures of my inside. Well,
I don't have the guts for that joke. But anyway, tell us. For those people who haven't heard
those who have not yet heard my expound upon the wonders of me. I mean,
who is you anyway? Who am us? Anyway?
Who am I? Well, my name is Rick Bowes, and I.
But the byline is Richard.
The byline is Richard. Yes, and
but,
I don't
but
know
you
why
answer
I
to
did.
Rick.
Everyone calls me Rick. Yes. Except members of the family who call me Ricky.
Even your website calls you Rick.
Even my website, especially my website. But yeah, And I write speculative fiction.
By the way, I just have to tell people there is now, finally, after all these years, a